This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. A new survey by the Movement for Black Lives shows broad support among Black Americans for defunding police and refunding alternatives to policing. The survey, conducted in collaboration with Gen Forward at the University of Chicago, specifically shows that 67% of Black Americans support reallocating part of police budgets toward investments in healthcare, education, and housing and other areas, while 55% support divestment from police departments and allocating entire police budgets towards such investments. At a time when media coverage of the racial justice demands from summer 2020 has waned, the study renews the urgency of reimagining the institutions that cause racial violence and harm. We turn now to Dr. Amara Enya, Policy and Research Director for the Movement for Black Lives. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
So first, let's talk about how the survey was conducted and why. Why was it restricted also specifically to Black Americans and not conducted across Americans of all races?
Sure. So the survey was really important because over the last several years, particularly since 2020, there have been so many conversations around transformation of the police system, defunding the police system, problems with the carceral state, and the harms that have been caused. So, of course, we had the uprisings in 2020, which were in response to the murder of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And then we had, not just in the United States, but globally, there were uprisings around this kind of violence. And so out of those uprisings came demands from communities around the transformations that needed to happen to keep people safe. And police, of course, was a large factor in that. And whether or not reforms are enough, whether or not to continue investing in police and policing in light of the harms that have been caused by police, particularly in Black communities. And so this survey is designed to really answer and to ask and answer some critical questions as it relates to policing and the system of policing and what communities want, and specifically what Black communities want, what they are articulating. And so that was the importance of the survey and really being able to have a more nuanced view of the interventions that are necessary to address public safety.
Were you surprised by the results, by the extent of support among Black Americans for, you know, reinvesting funds meant for policing into other non-police alternatives?
Not really surprised. So one of the really powerful aspects of this survey and this report is that it does provide a more nuanced view of the thoughts within the Black community around policing, and specifically around moving funds away from policing and actually shifting them into the things that our communities have articulated make them more safe. So investing in non-carceral responses, crisis interventions, investing in other things like housing, education. We actually saw a lot of these responses in some of the grassroots work that took place after the uprisings, just talking to people in their communities when they would share what are the things that create safety. And it became clear in those deeper conversations that police is not the starting point and the ending point of safety in Black communities. And in fact, when asked the question, as it was done in this report, of whether to move funds that go to policing to some of the other areas that they feel actually keep them safe, the responses were in the affirmative. And so it just underscores the fact that not only are people saying, yes, the system of policing has caused so much harm, but we're also unpacking what the alternatives look like and an appetite for investing in alternatives that might actually create better outcomes for our communities.
So when we look at the breakdown by age, I noticed that there is an interesting breakdown, generational breakdown within the Black community. Just even this idea of, would you be willing to call the police when crisis hits? Do you fear calling the police? Give me a sense of that. What you found in the survey in terms of differences generation-wise?
Well, there are definitely some differences generation-wise, but in some instances, they were not huge differences. So on the question that you named about people, how people feel about calling the police, if they have to, that's a really important question, because as we've seen over the last several years, in some instances where police were called, it actually escalated the situation or deaths occurred. And so there's this hesitancy, particularly with younger people, those in the younger generation, with calling the police. When you look at older respondents, the hesitation around calling the police was a little bit less. However, if given the alternative, so one of the questions is, if given the alternative to call another entity, agency, or have some alternative to police, that they actually would utilize that alternative, which is a very, very important point. You have people who, depending on their age, there are differences in terms of their willingness to call the police. But in both instances, across the age spectrum, when provided with an alternative, they would actually utilize that alternative. And that's a really important point that plays a role in the kinds of interventions that we should be pushing from a policy standpoint and the alternatives to policing that we can actually be building in our communities.
One of the things that is so striking, not just specifically about the survey, but in general, is of course that the familiarity with the criminal justice system that Black Americans have, just because of disproportionate racial targeting, is so different, especially compared to white America. Did your survey examine that? And if so, what did you find?
Well, it definitely examines that. So you'll see that come out in some of the questions around people's attitudes toward police, how willing they are to call the police, even in an emergency, how willing they are to lean into other alternatives. Even some of the opinions that that we found people shared about their willingness to, their desire to actually move funds away from policing and invest it into other mental health responses, alternative crisis response services rather than police. You're seeing all of these attitudes being reflected because they speak to the relationship that Black communities in particular have had with the police, which has been fraught, right? So instances of death at the hands of police, feeling unsafe because of police, and how we define safety. What you're seeing in the survey results, where you're seeing large percentages of respondents saying that they prefer alternatives, they prefer to have alternatives. And when those alternatives are made available, they would prefer them over police. That's very, very important, because it is answering this question of, if we're not going to the police as the first step or the first go-to, then who are we calling? What is the alternative? That's important because it's us asking that difficult question, but also answering that question. And so the answers to that question, meaning the interventions that we should be proposing, are coming out in the responses that we found in the survey, because people are literally saying, yes, we would prefer to actually utilize mental health respondents, a mental health crisis response, some kind of alternative. And that informs what kinds of policies we should be getting behind and what we should be pushing with policymakers, with legislators, and it's supported by the data.
Now, when there are high profile killings of particularly Black Americans by police, the calls for reforms become louder, and you end up, especially even among liberal lawmakers who say they support racial justice, the knee-jerk response is to pour more money into policing to try to get better training or have greater racial diversity in among police departments. Does your survey address that, the issue of reforms and reformism?
It does in many ways. So the fact that close to 55% of Black people said that they were either strongly or somewhat believe in divesting from police departments and putting their entire budget toward investments in other areas. And those other areas include healthcare, education, and housing. That's a huge statement. It speaks to when people say reform, so often it's this tweaking around the edges of police and policing. It's things that we know don't really get to the root causes of harm that come from the policing system. So the fact that you have these percentages who are saying they are actually in favor of putting the entire budget toward investment in other areas. We also are seeing that 86% of Black people support creating a new agency of first responders who specialize in de-escalating violence and providing mental health support and other social services. That's a huge percentage saying essentially that it's not just enough to tweak around the edges of policing. We actually support first responders who specialize in de-escalating violence, and that's where the resources should go. So when you see a lot of frustration around reform, a lot of that is because the reforms have been not really getting to the root causes of the harm and the perceptions that Black people have about what is actually going to create better outcomes, what will create safety. And so we are seeing 88% of respondents support hiring mental health professionals. What does that tell us about how when in emergency situations, what the response should actually be? It's telling us that perhaps we should be looking at other alternatives rather than police showing up on the scene, perhaps hiring more mental health responders, perhaps diverting some of those funds that are going into policing. As you mentioned, it's always additional funding for police, and we're still seeing these kinds of outcomes, actually diverting some of those funds to some of these other things that people have said would actually create better outcomes, would actually make them feel safe, would actually help them feel that the system is not a system of harm. And that's really, really important. And it's the kind of nuance that this report shows.
So it matters how one defines reforms then. And that's where there's a lot of disconnect, right, between the sort of mainstream discussion around policing, which generally revolves around additional body cameras, how to train police to, you know, use different kinds of chokeholds. Rather than how to replace police with non-policing alternatives, how to have a 911 dispatcher send somebody who is unarmed and who has special training in mental health crises rather than a cop. Those are two very different kinds of reforms.
Absolutely. Absolutely different kinds of reforms, and really just speak to the dissonance and the distance between what has been pushed, particularly in the mainstream, and what our communities are saying are necessary. So you mentioned the danger of a traffic stop, right? There are questions around why armed police officers are making traffic stops, especially when reports had come out, I believe, in Mississippi about the use of traffic stops as revenue generators and increasing contact with police, and those that increased frequency of contact can create increased frequency of poor outcomes, violent situations, and so on and so forth. And so the question then becomes, well, why should armed police be pulling people over for traffic violations, right? Or why should police be giving bicyclists tickets, right, for riding their bike on the sidewalk, for example? Why should there be those kinds of interactions? Why should individuals who are having a mental health crisis, why should armed police be called to the scene, especially in instances where they may have exacerbated or escalated a situation? These are very valid questions that have been asked, and it's why you're seeing this friction about the kinds of reforms that have been pushed and that have been sort of given high visibility versus the kinds of reforms and really transformations and systems change that can actually create better outcomes, mitigate, minimize, eliminate the harms completely that have come from these violent police interactions.
And so when we hear the slogan defund the police, given these survey results, how should one interpret that three-word slogan, which is a really important rejoinder to and a really important sort of part two to Black Lives Matter?
Absolutely. And it was a phrase that became such a lightning rod, if you will, over the last few years. And I think the power of this report and the value of this report is that it adds nuance to the phrase. So when we asked Black people, would they prefer or would they be in favor of shifting resources from policing to these alternatives, they responded in the affirmative, and the data bears that out, which is important because it's one, it's saying, yes, there is a desire to shift funds away from policing and to put it into other areas, other alternatives that would have better outcomes for Black people. And two, it is not just offering a critique of policing and the policing system. It is also answering the question. It's saying if there's a critique of the policing system, but there are also alternatives that we can work to build, that we can put in place. There are alternatives that we can create, and there's an appetite for those alternatives. And that's very powerful because a lot of the critique over the last few years was, well, it's just what we're against. It's just defund the police. It's a very one-dimensional analysis of that phrase, when in actuality, there's support from the data that says, yes, people do want to move funds away from policing, and they have ideas about the alternatives, structures and systems and protocols that can be developed to which they want those funds to go toward instead. And that's a very, very important nuance.
What's the next step from this survey? How do these surveys' results get put into action?
There's some very practical ways that the results from the survey can be put into action. So one of them is we are already familiar with organizations that have been working to build some of these alternatives in real time. And so we are moving toward a national campaign that will actually bolster these efforts to build these alternatives. At the local level, it's about passing local resolutions to develop crisis response models, mental health crisis response models in municipalities across the country. So that's a very practical intervention that can be put in place, and there's precedent for it. There are existing models. And so our work with the national campaign is to really lift that up, amplify, and get even more support for the continued building of those alternative models in cities across the country. There are also federal implications. So we have the People's Response Act, which was introduced by Representative Cori Bush, and it also focuses on mental health crisis response, albeit at the federal level, and takes a lot of inspiration from the Movement for Black Lives Breathe Act, which was comprehensive omnibus legislation that really defined public safety on our terms. And so the People's Response Act takes a subset of that and advances it at the federal level. And so we'll be getting behind that legislation. But the other really practical use for this kind of report is it can be used, one, to counter some of the mythology or some of the inaccurate characterizations about the critique of the policing system and even the critique of the amount of money that is put into policing and into the carceral state. It gives actual data about what people think, what people believe, and how they feel those resources are being used and if they feel that they are being used well, and what are some alternative ways that resources can be used. It can be useful at the state level and the federal level. And it gives policymakers, legislators, lawmakers tangible materials to use to back up their advocacy for particular pieces of legislation. And that's very important. So when they're pushing for reallocating resources from one place to another, they actually have the support of the research as to the why. And that can be a very powerful tool, especially in advocacy spaces.
We know that often getting any kind of congressional action at the federal level can be almost impossible in these times. And so I'm wondering if you think that the survey results are also useful for local efforts, you know, city council votes and individuals on city councils who want to pass resolutions diverting money away, because police departments are funded by cities, right? Cities make the choice to pour money into policing at the expense of other projects and programs. And we see in city after city, mayors, many of them Democrats, working for police and working to uplift police and working to continually pour more money into policing, are often beholden to police unions. But we're seeing some changes at city council levels where people who might identify as abolitionists are getting elected to city council and are diverting money away from policing. Do you feel that your survey could also be useful at that local level where there might be more promise for change?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as I mentioned, we're actually launching a national campaign. And part of that strategy, there's a federal component, but there's a municipal component or a local component to pass these mental health crisis response resolutions at the city level, either through resolution or by ordinance. And it just speaks to the importance of what happens at the local level, because those budgeting decisions, those allocation decisions are largely made through local governments. And so what this does, what this research does, what this report does, is it gives some heft to those local efforts, provides real data about how people feel about the ways that funds are invested, the ways that their budgets are constructed. And again, it provides some fodder for local policymakers, whether elder people, council people, to be able to articulate clearly an agenda that says, here are the changes, here are the interventions that we should be pushing, and here's why. So it's an incredibly powerful tool and resource for local advocacy efforts, for local policymaking. And also it can be useful at the federal level, but definitely at the local level.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website where people can read the results of the survey themselves and share it.
Absolutely. So they can find it at www.m4bl.org. And so the report is there, and we hope people share it on our platforms. We're also on social media, so folks can engage the data there as well.
Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Dr. Amara Enya, Policy and Research Director for the Movement for Black Lives. We've been discussing the results of a new survey that was conducted among Black Americans on the issue of police funding and divestment. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. I'm the Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org. Watch it on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.